you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near.
Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. And we're going to start right into this, Marianne, because I think this is probably about the fourth or fifth time I've had you in the studio where we've talked about your book a little or referenced. We're going to do some readings today, and then we run out of time.
Well, we get carried away with things.
And it never happens. So we're going to start right off in just a moment reading from your book, Memories of an African Son. I have the copy in front of me by Marianne Simpkins. And let me just read the back cover next to that lovely picture of you.
Oh, thanks.
Now, that's also the picture we talked yesterday on the Monday edition of Mark and Friends about the articles that you write for Prime Life Times.
Yeah,
is that the same photograph?
Yeah.
I thought it was
basically
a familiar one. And on the back cover of your book, it says, Marianne Simpkins spent her childhood in Ghana, Zimbabwe, and the United States. She has traveled to 22 countries and found every single one of them to be interesting and intriguing. Marianne encourages everyone to give their resources and aid to organizations around the world feeding and caring for women and children, rescuing and protecting animals in need, and to those working to protect and care for the environment of our God-given, gorgeous blue planet. Well, Marianne, we've talked about this and had you do some reading in the past and got a lot of great feedback. Oh. I think you were even told by some friends, they loved hearing the author's voice or loved hearing your voice.
I was so grateful.
And I know at the time I said, hey, pick out a couple different chapters or portions. Now, your book is broken into how many? 50?
I think it's 60.
60 different, what do you call them? Memories, snippets?
Vignettes. I call them chapters, but they're vignettes.
Different vignettes.
Yeah.
The book, again, is titled Memories of an African Son. And it was written, what, now we're into the...
April of 2015 is when it came out.
So a year or so ago.
Some months, yeah.
So do you have a special selection or two or three today that you can encourage our listeners with? And give us the thumbnail overview. Why you wrote the book for some of people that weren't tuned in. Was it last October? When did we have you on where we did some major reading?
Yeah, it was October.
Okay, last October. So it's a while ago.
I wrote the book because so many people kept asking me to. So I just did. And I had written some articles about various stories and people were like, write more. So I did. And I also wrote it because some publishers, Wesleyan, Lighthouse, they liked it. And they saw segments from it. And they were like, write it. So that was why I guess I wrote it. And also, I guess I just wanted to put down my thoughts. Mm-hmm. So.
And did you feel a sense of God leading or saying, Marianne, you've had these experiences with me, with your family? Now, I should say, we mentioned Ghana and Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were there primarily, or at least initially, because of your parents being missionaries and you were their daughter.
The only reason I was there, Mark. I wish I could say something more fabulous. But, but truly, it's the only reason. I was taken there.
And so this
very grateful.
Is a recounting of many of those stories, life experiences, ways you saw God at work, or life lessons learned as you were on the mission field. And some of them have like a message or actually kind of turn into a devotional thought for us all.
Yeah, that's kind of how I think. Yeah. So that's kind of how I had to write it.
And as you mentioned, 60 different chapters. What are you going to share with us today?
Okay.
And why are you choosing
I am just such going
first?
To start at the beginning this time.
Okay, in the beginning.
No, not that serious. But in this beginning. Before I start, I want to read the author's note that's at the very beginning, because I know some people do get a little confused sometimes. When I lived in Zimbabwe, it was not called Zimbabwe at all. So it was called Rhodesia. So I'm just going to read that before I start. It says, author's note, although Zimbabwe was called Southern Rhodesia and then just Rhodesia during the time that I lived there, that was the first big shift. I have chosen to refer to it whenever possible by its current name of Zimbabwe, given when the nation gained its independence.
And this is recollecting some childhood memories, therefore the name Memories of an African Son.
Yeah.
And this takes us back to
1970? We're going into
1963. Okay.
And long time ago. Before there were any computers or any cell phones or any of anything like that.
Yeah.
All right. Shall I read?
Yes. And what's the title of this chapter?
Memories of an African Son.
Chapter 1.
I grew up in an Africa that no longer exists. You can't go there. I can't go there. I lived there half a century ago, at the cusp of the modern age. We lived as missionaries on an outpost 100 miles on dirt roads from the first town that had electricity, far out in the African wildlands, in the bush country. At night, I would sit on the step of our house and watch the huge African sun start to sink behind the mountains surrounding us. Night after night, I would sit and watch as one by one, across the vast scope in front of me, I saw the village fires in the mountains and on the savannah spark to life in every direction. Then, moments later, a drumbeat would sound, first from one direction and then another. Some so distant, others close. Into darkness the sun dropped, its passing bringing the hope of coolness, and I was left with the night and the sound of drums and the light of fires cutting the darkness of the hills. It was a different life from the one I live now, fording rivers, reading by lantern, hauling water, watching my mother make our bread and much of our food from scratch. Watching her teach and care for the people around us, people that she loved, and who also loved her, until her dying day. So many mornings, I woke to the sound of my father's voice on the veranda, teaching Africans in this remote outpost what had taken him years of college degrees in America to learn. He taught it freely and lovingly. For me, his voice remained always intertwined with the sun that came through my windows as that light that defined so much of life rose again. Many days, except for the light from our lanterns and fireplace, we slept when it went down and woke when it rose. Our African friends taught us much. Africa itself taught us much before it passed into this modern age. Africa defined my childhood. In the pages that follow are my memories and the lessons learned and lived, and woven through the thoughts and memories resides the memory of an African son.
Memories of an African son. Now we know the rest of the story, how you got the title.
The title.
And how can people purchase multiple copies of this book?
They can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can order the paperback from Barnes & Noble or get it as an ebook, and order the paperback from Amazon or get it as an ebook. The print is a little darker from Barnes & Noble, so just put that in there.
And you have the pleasure of turning the page and touching it. Now
like
people
books
with
still.
Ebooks and all this
know.
Other thing.
I've read a lot of ebooks and I greatly enjoyed them, but I love books.
Now, we didn't get a chance yesterday to mention the Wellness and Brain Fitness Fair that's coming to Marketplace Mall, but I think you're going to have copies of the book on one of the tables are available there.
They gave me that opportunity. I appreciated it.
So if people can't wait till Saturday, September 24th, and this Wellness and Brain Fitness Fair happening at Marketplace Mall, and I should point out it's Marketplace Mall, even though we talk a lot about Lincoln Square.
Right.
This is going to be at Marketplace Mall from 10 to 2 p.m. And I think all over the mall, actually, they'll have different kiosks and tables set up, and Great News Radio is going to be represented there. I've been working with Bill and Jason Gingold. And they're overseeing the whole fair without activities and prizes and giveaways. And his passion under Dr. G. Brainworks is cognitive thinking, helping seniors live a quality life. And so we represent the spiritual side. That's why he's invited Great News Radio to be a part of the festivities. But your books will be available on one of the tables somewhere?
Yeah, they will. Yeah.
Will you be there?
I can't be there, but they offered to put them out anyway.
Okay, your books will be there. But if they can't wait, they can
buy
like
there.
Google search Memories of an African Son, or go to Barnes & Noble or other quality bookstores should be carrying this.
That'd be great.
All right, and the title is Memories of an African Son by Mary Ann Simkins. So S-I-M-K-I-N-S, in case they did a Google search.
Right,
or,
true.
Okay, so that was chapter one. Are we going to go right into chapter
sure.
two? Okay, so you're laying the groundwork. These are memories growing up in Africa, which was called
Rhodesia.
Rhodesia.
That's where we start. We'll move ahead through the book to other places and to Ghana and so forth.
But okay.
Yeah. All right. So chapter two?
Chapter two.
Packing. There are moments in our lives when a single event becomes the symbol that the entire trajectory of our life has suddenly changed. For me, it was mid-afternoon after a long bus ride when I arrived home from third grade one day and found that our entire hallway and living room were filled with large gunmetal black barrels that had been designed to hold crude oil on a transatlantic oil freighter ship. It is not what a child expects to find in the living room. My yellow tin lunchbox in the shape of a school bus was still in my hand as I weaved my way between the barrels, feeling ever so much smaller than they were. Large round metal lids were in stacks against a wall. My mother was lining the barrels with heavy plastic sheets, and it appeared we were to pack up our household items in them. Instead of the crude oil they had been designed for, these barrels filled with our belongings would be sealed with an airtight gasket and taken back onto a freighter for the trip across the Atlantic, then on to meet the Indian Ocean and finally to rest at the Cape of Good Hope. Then they would be transported by trucks hundreds of miles north into the bush country of Rhodesia. We would not see them again for many months, long after we ourselves had arrived. We would need to pack everything necessary to set up basic housekeeping: plates, silverware, sheets, towels. I remember putting a few of my toys in the black cavernous barrel and feeling like they were disappearing forever. In some ways, they were, because when I once again pulled them out, months later, I was in a very different state of mind. I had heard the talk about going to Africa, with only a vague understanding of the meaning of any of the discussions or where that might be. But now, as the afternoon sun shone through the open windows and bounced off the metal lids, as furniture was pushed further to the side and out of the way, as each second passed, that phrase became starkly real. We lived in a time and place when traveling significant distances was a major endeavor. Interstates were in their infancy, only a few had been built, certainly none around us, and cars, while certainly spacious, did not have many of today's amenities, except for a local station on the radio. Most people, at least in our area of East Tennessee, were frugal with their money. They did not frequently jump in cars or planes and travel all over the country. Yet here we were, putting our belongings in huge empty oil barrels, heading off to somewhere very far away. I had seen the pictures of the buzzards on the houses in northern Ghana, brought back after my father and a pioneer missionary had flown into the country to survey the possibility of setting up a mission. I'd shaken my head with a mixture of horror and fear at the sight of those poor buzzards. I did not want to go there, thank you. And I had seen the picture of my father, surrounded by laughing, friendly people and deep green tropical plants, drinking coconut water straight from a coconut in Ghana. That's all I knew of the continent we were going to. Nothing made sense. Nothing looked normal in the pictures. But I think it was the huge oil barrels in the living room that brought it all home. Reality was setting in, and I wasn't sure I liked it. It took some days for my parents to decide what could be taken, what would survive the arduous journey on the other end. Neighbors stopped in to look at the barrels. They were a novelty, made to go clear across the ocean and all, and having been constructed to carry oil and gasoline, which at that time cost around 20 or 30 cents a gallon. The entire trip across the ocean part sparked interest, as not many things were imported at that time. My mother would stop whatever she was doing during those days of packing and make coffee and chat with our visitors. She always seemed to have time for people. I saw a picture the other day, at random, of an old rusting black oil barrel in an alley with a fire lit inside of it and homeless people gathered round it for warmth. I stood in the aisle of my local bookstore near the mall with tears streaming down my cheeks, rooted to the spot. As I held the picture in my hands, I should have been crying for the homeless people. I know that. But at that moment, all I could see was the old black barrels, unexpectedly in our living room. Strange how we can so deeply associate an object with a feeling. In my mind's eye, I see, long ago, a little girl putting a few toys in a huge oil barrel, not knowing for sure where it was going, and I feel all over again the uncertainty, the fear. I hear again the adults talking in the background. It seems children often hear adults talking as though they're in the background, their voices fading in and out, occasionally carrying random pieces of necessary information. They talked of 14 injections, some painful, that I would take before we left, for inoculations against diseases I did not know existed. They talked of mosquito nets and their importance, and the quinine or chloroquine that I would need to start taking immediately, and every week afterward for many years, as a preventative against malaria, which was running rampant. Those last days, I would often go outside and look at the ever-present Smoky Mountains that I loved. I would position myself on the top of the white wooden porch of our clapboard house and spin maple tree seed pods off of it, watching them slowly spin and glide downward to their new resting place. Or I would sit on the soft brown and green needles under the beautiful pungent pine tree I'd claimed as my own. Then I'd walk along the lane, eating delicious honeysuckle that I pulled off as I made my way down the unpaved road. Or go over to the pond with my friends and gather a few more tadpoles to put in glass jars filled with pond water. Poor things. We always put them back in the pond, but not before we had completely disrupted their environment. Eventually, like clockwork, I would hear my mother calling out from the window for me to stay away from the stray dog I was trying to befriend. So I would go down to wade in the creek and look up at Rattlesnake Mountain and wonder if anyone had seen a snake up there recently. But it was ending. I knew it. The freewheeling enjoyment of all those things was coming to an end. Change had arrived. It was stepping closer to me every minute. Anyone who has ever gone through change, whether good or bad, will know what I mean. I could feel it in the air. Sometimes there is only one thing to do. At least it's the only thing I know, even now. Hold on to God and go forward. Always forward. Dear God, the changes of life start when we are young and they continue. And yet, isn't life about that? About always going forward and trusting. I pray for myself and for each of us that we will understand that no day is like any other. Each is filled with something new, something else to know, and something to learn. Give me eyes to see that every day and every season is a time to grow in you and to realize that, like the psalmist says, my times are in your hands. Psalm 31:15.
Very nice. I'm thinking, do we have time to fit in another one? But I don't think we do.
Probably not.
I was writing a couple of little notes, and I'm going to close out with a great song by Linda McKechnie. It's that African sounding. It's some great sound effects that'll fit with your book. But I like two things. I wrote down change. You know how we oftentimes will say embrace change.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of those taglines. But here you're saying not so much embracing change, embracing the Lord or leaning into the Lord during these times of change. But another thing you mentioned, and I don't know if you got to elaborate on it, but as a child you saw those barrels and you know, it was like the mystery, and then you realize, oh, that's where my possessions, my belongings go, and then everything kind of changed. But then as an adult, when you saw the picture of barrels, it reminded you of the childhood memories, but also the homeless people that are around the barrels. And was that a life lesson where you're thinking, wow, there's other people people that are around these kind of barrels that are homeless that need help? Was there a inner meaning or something that we should have drawn from that illustration where instead of picturing those homeless people around the barrels, you thought of your own childhood memories where you wish you would have thought, Lord, how can I help those people?
Oh, I love that. No, I didn't think of that, but that's okay. Excellent. I love it.
Well, I was just thinking, like, not that you were being selfish, because of certainly the Lord will trigger memories mm-hmm. from our childhood, but I thought, wow, what a great insight where you were maybe thinking, Lord, I'm consumed with myself thinking of my childhood memories instead of worrying about these homeless people around the barrels.
No, I didn't think that, but what is interesting is it felt when I saw that picture of those barrels and those people in the fire, it felt like I was looking at a picture of an object, that barrel, that was very old. And it made me realize my memory was that old, and that now this thing that had looked so imposing and so new and freshly painted and, you know, freighter ships, and it was all brand new, novelty, people coming to look at it, was now just something in an alley. It was just that now. And wow. I think more than anything, what affected me was realizing we look at these material things, like right now maybe we're looking at a cell phone, or what if someday in the future we don't even use those in any sense and we just see one, you know, cast over here somewhere. And I don't know, I think that's what affected me more.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's a radio spot that we air, we're Focus on the Family, it's in the future, and they're looking back, and they're like, they find this ring in an attic, and like, oh, that used to be a bond of marriage. People would put it around their finger to symbolize marriage and commitment, and the person's like, oh, really? That sounds so old-fashioned. It's like where they associated something, but I was thinking, because I know you have a heart for those that are hurting, those that are underserved, and like the homeless and so forth. And I thought, wow, here you have a picture of that barrel where those people are living life with uncertainty and not secure, and maybe some of the same emotions that a little child would have that they're having, also being like around that same kind of barrel with the mystery of, Lord, how are we going to get our next meal? What's going to happen next?
Oh, wow.
So
that's really a good takeaway. Thank you. I love it when people, and this has happened so many times, people are like, I read this, it made me think that, and this put together, I'm like, I'm glad.
Well, that was part of our prayer with the morning program before we started broadcasting, that God, however His Holy Spirit would bring thoughts or insights or conviction or hope. And so, I was kind of drawing a parallel. Yeah, we have to remember about those people that are around the barrels.
Absolutely.
They're hurting.
Absolutely.
Well, the book is called Memories of an African Son by Mary Ann Simpkins. You can purchase multiple copies at Barnes & Noble. And if you want to call the station, we can always match you up with Mary Ann and how to get you a copy or mail you a copy, maybe mail you a signed copy that you want to give to your friend or something.
Karen did that, and I appreciated it, and I did mail a signed copy.
Sure. So call us, 217-367-7777. That's 217-367-7777. Memories of an African Son by Mary Ann Simpkins. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Mary Ann Offenstein with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.
God bless you, everybody.